it's time for people to really decide what life they want and what they want their life to look like, and understand that you can design a business to feed that. Whatever your skill level, whatever your desire, whatever your earning capacity, whatever your goals are, there are so many options to make that work.
Welcome to another episode of Entrepreneurs Rising. I'm your host, Carl Taylor, and today we are joined by another guest, James Kemp. And I've known James for 10 years, close to somewhere around there. I don't know.
Probably in high single digits, maybe.
Yeah, high single digits. Maybe we haven't quite hit the decade, but
we haven't quite hit the decade.
We've known each other, been in similar circles for a long time. And James, also, fun fact for those of you who don't know, I used to have another podcast, which you can still listen to, called Future of Humanity Podcast. And James was one of my guests on that show. So if you haven't checked it out, you can go find that, Future of Humanity. The reason James is on, apart from being one of the smartest people I know in the business space, like, he's just a different thinker and not afraid to put out his views on things, right? Just go, here's how I see it. Here's how things are. And, you know, I think the world we live in, there are a number of people who do that, strong opinions without necessarily going through the fires to have the true conviction that they seem to think they have. Whereas, you know, James has got the rungs on the board, been through the different journey to come to it. And the reason I think it'd be really interesting for us to start is, what James does is he's really owned the space of helping people become a sovereign consultant, because that's exactly what he has done. And what is a sovereign consultant? Well, he can probably tell you best in a moment, but my understanding is it's to help you get to $1 million a year profit as a consultant, coach, mentor, whatever you want to call yourself, with you and just one team member. Now, if you've been listening to this show for any period of time, you'll know that in general, me, Carl Taylor, I spread the message of, you want to build a business that can work without you. You ultimately want to be the owner of your business, not the operator of your business. And so what I think would be really refreshing getting James on is understanding that both can work and understanding that this is another path. That maybe if you're going, you know, Carl's path isn't the one I want to go on, I just want to keep the simplicity of me plus a team member and make bucket loads of money, James is the man to talk about it. So, James, welcome.
Thanks, man. Great to be here.
So let's start with, why have you settled on sovereign consultant? Because I know some of your journey, the listeners may not.
Yeah.
That's not always been your business. You've had large teams, you've been involved in various different size businesses. What's brought you here to this sovereign consultant path and vision, I guess?
Yeah, I think the immediate thing is, in the last 12 months, I had to design a business that fed my life. I think we're all in it for that, whether we choose the team path or whether we choose the solo path, or everything in between, because there are some in between bits. But, you know, in the last 12 months, had some significant life changes. So I used to be married and I'm not anymore. And that entailed me being, you know, with having two kids here with me full time. And it meant that I had to put some very serious constraints on where my time and energy went. In the previous season I was in, I didn't have too many constraints. I was building a business. I was hiring people. You know, I worked the hours that God gave me, and, you know, I hired the people that I needed. But in the process of that, I also created a lot of commitments and obligations, which I couldn't then fulfill in this season, you know, in terms of my time and energy and those things. And 12 months ago, I set out to say, to re-embrace kind of my roots in the beginning, which was, you know, me in a room with a laptop, making stuff, helping people make money. Because previous to that, I ran a really large e-commerce online business that we grew to 120 million a year. So I know the online space, and my journey in consulting was, you know, back down and doing it myself and directly serving clients. And I'm back there again with a little bit more skills, experience, and a ton of leverage these days. So it's very much, for me, you know, an important season. So over the past 18 months, I've gone from 13 people to one. And it's a pretty significant change in that. But I think the key theme that we both believe in is the boundaries and constraints of, you know, when am I creating time and energy for my clients and the commitments and the business, and in your case, the team? And when am I creating time and energy for myself, my family, my loved ones, and those things? So they're both a path to constraints. I've just chosen the one that's pretty lean in me.
You've hit the nail on the head. Like, listening to you talk, what your experience of big team was is, yes, you had the team, but you didn't have those constraints on, where does my time and energy actually need to go? What are the key things that I have to do versus making sure everything else is just being taken care of by a team, which is really my view of, if you're going to build a business that you own and not operate, it's that you act as the owner, and the owner is maybe at, you know, if you go to the full level of the investor level, you might attend a quarterly board meeting, and that's as much as you're doing if you're at the investor level. So yeah, that's really interesting.
For me, it was a decision when the fork in the road was presented to me. Do I want to acquire the skills of an owner, the skills of an owner to delegate and hire and those kind of things, and, you know, up-level those, which is, there are constant levels of mastery, you know, towards mastery. Or do I want to refine my skills as a creator, you know, get back and down in the trenches, creating stuff for myself that works, that I can then give to other people.
Yeah.
I'll always naturally default the innate creator in me, because my happy place is sitting in this office. There's probably a dog behind me. I'm creating something that works for me and that I can use to, you know, grow or develop. And then I'm giving that to other people. So yeah, it was a conscious decision not to acquire the skills of an owner, which I freely admit that I didn't have. I had some of them. I'm not as good as you, and I'm not as good as many of our, you know, contemporaries, but it was to double down on the skills of a creator, because that's my happy place.
Absolutely. I love that. And that comes down to that self-awareness, you know, is something I think it's important in life, but definitely as an entrepreneur, you know, if you're going to succeed in business, you've got to have a really strong awareness of self to know. Well, you don't have to. You can go off on these journeys, but then what will happen is similar to you and some of our other friends, where all of a sudden they get to a certain level of success in their business and go, I hate this thing. This is not me. I need to blow this up, because they didn't have the self-awareness along the journey to go, no, that's not my thing. So on that,
I think you need to have experienced both paths as well to make an educated decision, because otherwise it's a guess, right? So sure. Having built teams and having been solo, you know, the choice for me was pretty easy. And I find that, you know, when you talk to people, like 90% of people, you know, the path is clear for them. It's just committing to that path, because there's nothing wrong with either. And the people who can't make the decision around, do I build a team or do I go out alone and focus on leverage and the things we have available to us now, then it's usually because they don't have enough experience in either or camp to actually make a conscious decision, and they need to try one and work it out.
That's so true. Well, then that probably is a good place to go is, all right, listener, you've gone, you know what James is talking about sounds maybe me, like, or maybe right now, you know, you're still in that kind of self-employed mode. You haven't gone down the path of building team, but you've heard him talk about leverage, because there is a difference between being a one-man business where you're doing everything yourself and being a one-man business with leverage. So let's talk a bit about that, because this is some lessons that someone who might be earlier in their journey could learn from and avoid some of the pain that I know I've been through. I'm hallucinating that you've been through. When you say leverage, give us some examples from your own business or some of your client business. What do you mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, at the true simplest form, and we'll get practical in a second, but, you know, in the knowledge economy, we leverage an idea. You know, we leverage an idea to get us a result. We leverage an idea or a skill that we possess. So in my case, I chose the path of leveraging skills, and my skills are pretty adept at making offers and creating commercial results for people, predominantly because I've done it for 25 years of my life, where I was my path through sales with organizations like BMW, Xerox, Vodafone, and these guys, my path into entrepreneurship and my path in startups means that I've had thousands and thousands of offers come in front of me. So I've developed over a couple of decades that sixth sense of what is going to sell to, you know, a large group of people, from B2C, from consumer offers all the way up to enterprise stuff. I've personally sold everything in between. So for me, leverage is...
Yeah, let's just quickly define offers too, because, you know, that word might make sense in our world, but, you know, if you're you got a retail store, or, you know, you're an e-com or whatever, you might not fully go, what does he mean by offers? So define what you refer to when you say an offer. What do you mean? What are you pointing to?
So an offer is a group of ideas that's wrapped around a product. So if you're an e-com store and you sell a blanket, you know, the offer is that this blanket is going to make you real very warm, and the benefits and associated pieces around it. So it's positioning a product in front of an audience that have an opportunity to buy it.
Nice.
You know, and there's various mechanisms of offers in terms of price and benefits and bonuses and things, that lots of levers to pull, almost infinite ones. And again, in the knowledge economy, where we can, you know, especially when we're selling information or services, we can pull a lot of stuff out of the toolbox to make an offer really great, to make a product super attractive. So for me, offers is like the centerpiece of everything, because even though I'm known as a marketer, my true skill is in offer making, because I want an offer-driven business. And an offer-driven business is, for the simplest thing, for years I sold a book you know, and the book was $5 and it was really good. It was 130 pages of how to build and become a sovereign consultant. And the next natural thing was for someone to buy a $500 training on how to become a sovereign consultant. And the next natural thing was to buy a $5,000 program where I worked with them to become a sovereign consultant. And the next natural thing was to buy a $50,000 licensing and partnership pack with me where they use some of my material to become a sovereign consultant. Right? And the great thing with intellectual property is it's fractal. Like we can break it down into tiny, tiny little bits, you know, a book, a course, a program, and delivery. So the piece for me was always about leverage of the skills and making offers, creating offers for myself and helping other people do it.
Yeah.
Because the caveat there is you need skills, you know, and I'm at a point in my life where the people who come to me are generally a similar age to me, right? And they've built skills up through corporate work, through hustle, through entrepreneurship, through whatever path it is. And so I've just got really good at packaging those skills and helping them make money from those skills in various different ways with leverage.
Yeah, I love that. And that clarity of the offer is not the product or service. Like I like how you said, if you sell a blanket, because the offer is not the blanket, the offer is basically how you, the wrapping around how you present that blanket to someone for them to actually purchase.
Yeah, automation agency doesn't sell people pushing buttons for their clients.
No.
The offer is that we'll save you time and headache and pain of pushing those buttons yourself.
Yeah.
So an offer by its nature takes away some pain and solves a problem for someone on the other side of something. And the bigger the delta between the pain or the problem they're experiencing or the benefit they want, and the more efficiently your offer actually fulfills on that, the easier that offer is to sell.
I love that. That's a super useful thing. And I do know that you have a training around offers. So if someone's interested in learning more about offers, is there a place they can go or an email they can reach out to be like, hey, how do I get access to this training? Or is it only to your exclusive clients? How's that work?
I will actually give you a free template on how to create an offer. And someone told me that yesterday, brand new client, he came on board. I downloaded a template, made $100,000 with a free template that I downloaded on Instagram, which was pretty mind-blowing for me. I've had people buy cheap trainings and make low-ticket trainings and make amazing returns, but I've never had someone get something free and turn it into $100,000. So if you go to the offercode.co.
It just says a lot about the quality.
Yeah, it's a template. It's fill in the blanks.
Yeah, so offercode.co.
Offercode.co. If you go there, you can get a free template and understand some of the, you know, the mystery that I'm talking about.
All right. Well, we'll make sure that link is in the show notes as well. So if you missed it, don't worry about going back and trying to find it. You'll find it at the show notes at rising.show. So that's a great resource though. And I'm also going to put my hand up and say that I bought a training from James about the offer code training, and it got me enough to be like, hey, I need to do some more work with James. And I upgraded to, I can't even remember what the thing's called, but I upgraded into the next thing because I was like, this is good. This is useful. And I need some extra help. I'm speaking from experience that if this is hitting for you, that you're like, this sounds like something I want to know, James sounds like someone I want to know, I can also endorse that personally, not just because he's my friend, but I've done commercial work with him.
I'll send you the check later, mate.
Thanks. Affiliate commissions here and there, right? All right. So offers are super important, but we're talking about leverage. So offers are one component of leverage. And you talked about this example, at least in the knowledge economy of, you know, you sold a book and then you've maybe got a course and then maybe there's a more handheld approach and then you got your licensing. To someone who maybe that's not their world, they're not from our world of info marketing, right?
Yeah.
Where is the leverage in that? Like to me, it's quite obvious where the leverage is that is, but let's break it down super simplistic. And how does the leverage work? Is it effectively just the same content, but different levels of support, or how do you define that leverage in that?
Yeah. I mean, there's multiple routes to leverage. Like, and if we go back to the contrast example of your path and my path, for example, the leverage for me is that I have, as it stands, 81 people in a community. And those people have access to all my trainings and knowledge, et cetera. And everything I produce that works for me, I give to the clients in that community for them to use for themselves. And on a Tuesday morning and a Thursday evening, I get on Zoom for between an hour and a half and help them apply that. Right. And in the old model, if you had 81 clients that you were having to serve every day and you say had a, you know, a consulting practice with a door and a window and a desk behind it, and the 81 clients had to come in and out of your office all week, there wouldn't be many hours left in the week to actually live.
No.
Right. But, you know, on average, between 20 and 50 people come to one of my calls every week and I help them in real time. And of course, you're in mentorship and masterminds like I am, you know, learning through others is also a form of leverage. Yeah. Observing and seeing in real time what others are doing is a form of leverage, because you can abstract that, well, if it worked for Carl, then it might work for me when someone gets a result. So that's just a tiny example of, you know, leverage. And another example of the leverage is the template that I've just talked about. You know, it's an offer that made over $800,000 in sales. That was an offer that I developed and worked and created $800,000 worth of sales. Then I used the template to attract more people to me to say, I can sell with a basic Google Doc and, you know, about 1,000 words, something that's really high priced. So then I used the template from the results I've got from making $800,000 in sales to attract more people. So
and make,
you know,
more
leverages
sales.
And make more sales, and the cycle continues. So leverage is, you know, really fractal. And once you start to tune yourself to see those things, you realize that some of the smallest things that people sit on for years, you know, I've met consultants who had, oh, there was this amazing workshop I delivered 10 years ago and it was so exciting. And it was like, have you recorded it? Have you turned it into, you know, an online program? Have you taken the templates and the cheat sheets out of it, et cetera? And, you know, leverage doesn't necessarily mean that you have to sell it. But leverage with technology is also means like process, et cetera. If you've got a team, you can take a template and train them on it, right? So leverage is this understanding that nowadays with the digitization of things, we can create multiple variants, multiple copies, multiple modalities of things, whether it's recorded or video or text or these things, to turn one idea and one piece of information into multiple things.
Yeah.
And the better you are at that, the more money you can make and the more people you can reach and the more people you can help with the least input of you.
And there's a few things that come from you sharing that. Firstly, I want to point out from my model of how I look at building a business that works without you, one of the first things you need to do is you need to productize your service, right? And you've effectively done that, James, in your model. The key difference right now in the sovereign consultant approach is what I'm picking up is you still productized the delivery of the service, but you're choosing to be the person who's continuing to fulfill. Whereas if you're an agency or a consultant who wants to fully get out of the day-to-day, you productize the service, and then you also extract you out of the delivery of that product or service completely too.
Well, you're inserting that other layer of leverage, which is another
exactly
human being, right?
And some of the examples, you know, just to make sure this lands for people as you're talking, some of the examples of how I've done leverage too, like in my Dadpreneur program, our clients get access to pretty well all the SOPs that we've got in automation agency, job descriptions. You know, our client the other day, he's like, I'm needing to improve our marketing person. Do you have a job description for a job? And I was like, yeah, let me just pull out our head of marketing job description. Here you go. It's with the KPIs, everything. Like, this is what you need. You know, rework it to suit your needs, but this is what you need to go. And it's like, that's a piece of leverage from something I already have and had to use and our entire onboarding. You know, I've recorded a video of how we onboard new staff members in automation agency, which again becomes I've done that. I did that probably 8 years ago. That training was effectively created internally. And then now it's something that can be delivered to other people. And then even in the info marketing space, anyone who's followed me for a long period of time. So if you're listening to this and you've been around my world from, you know, 20 odd years ago, I used to do this training. I had a product called Inbox Domination, teaching people how to get to Inbox Zero. I did that training, I don't know, 2011, maybe. Sold it for a little bit. And then I stopped selling it, took it down from the website. I uploaded it to Udemy. It's a product on Udemy. And every year I make not a lot of money, but maybe 20, 30, 50 bucks, 100 bucks a year from a training that I'd created, stopped selling. And then also my buy a business for a dollar program. I used to teach people about how to buy a business. I took that product that used to be sold for thousands of dollars and I put it up on Udemy and it's just out there. And every year I make money. That's another form of leverage. It's something you might have that I'm no longer actively pursuing selling that, but it doesn't mean it doesn't represent value that I can't put it out there for someone to get value from and I can earn some passive income from it. So those were a few things that popped as you were sharing that might be helpful for your listener if you're going, how does this apply to me in my world?
Yeah. I think the story of my first kind of route into leverage is kind of interesting because we built a Groupon clone in New Zealand called GrabOne. And GrabOne grew to 120 million before it exited to a media company. And I was marketing director at the time. In the course of optimizing an e-commerce site that had 1.1 million users and about 50 to 60,000 daily transactions, I got pretty good at working out how to sell stuff on the internet, what cart pages look good and, you know, what checkout flow looks good and what abandoned cart emails you needed to send and what was copy and positioning that helped people actually sell things at a product level. And so when I left, that business, when I went out consulting, I could give that to large organizations and charge $3,000 to $5,000 a day to go and do it. But I was kind of just got myself a well-paid job again, you know, where I'd sit in people's offices, help their teams implement stuff that I'd done in the previous years and go forward. And I met a young guy called Sam Ovens in New Zealand. And he was like, you know, you're kind of the rising star. And, you know, we were the second largest e-commerce business in New Zealand. I had a brand, I had a reputation. He's like, why don't you do an online program? And so I took all the things that I developed, you know, inside GrabOne. I took all the things I developed inside other corporates and e-commerce businesses and packaged them up in a Google Drive folder. And I sold access to that for firstly $2,500, then $4,500, and later just shy of $7,000, about $6,800. And it was a Google Drive folder, and it was really ugly, and I've still got screenshots of it. And it just had all these templates and all these things that I knew worked.
Yep.
And I went to e-commerce people and said, I've got stuff that works. Do you want it? And I put them in a free Facebook group, and I got on a call with them every week to help them customize it. This is in the early days before people were on Shopify and everything was one click and optimization. It was, you had to work hard and Magento and all these things.
Oh, yeah.
That was the form of like, that was the leverage trail that I followed.
I love it.
And 13 months later, I'd sold $1.5 million worth of that product, that program, from templates, from knowledge and experience that I'd had. And the best thing about it was that I could focus on helping people implement. And the more people used my stuff, the better my stuff became, because I could see it wasn't just my examples I was using in these sites and big e-commerce stores. It was, you know, small clothing brands. And they'd be like, that's interesting.
Because you're getting the leverage of testing. You're getting other people testing your idea in the real world.
Exactly. That's the power of it, right? You know, so the development of like setting your IP free and setting your ideas free, it doesn't come back to you in just money where, you know, and the perception of the info space is often right. Like, what can I sell to make money? And I don't care how good it is. But when your stuff's good and you put it out there, it will always come back if it's given to good people who use it.
Mm.
So leverage has this wonderful flywheel effect when good ideas are spread and because good people use them and take them and run with them. And when you're inside that in action, you put your ideas out there and you get more ideas to put out there and the positive cycle continues.
100%. What I originally set out and imagined I would have in the Dadpreneur program when I outlined what kind of trainings would exist, I had a pretty clear idea and many of them got created. But then along the journey, like the idea of like, oh, you have these job descriptions, that hadn't even occurred to me that, hey, having a library of here's a whole bunch of roles in a company that if you're trying to build, you know, more of a leadership team in your business, like I've got swipe and deploy ready. Like it didn't even occur to me, but once you're in the real world, putting your ideas out there, people tell you what they need and you just go, oh yeah, I've got that, or I can create that and see it work.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And I'm not sure the whole profile of your audience, but it was interesting to me. My current girlfriend's friend was over the other day and she comes from a consulting background. And about 18 months ago, she was, you know, had the travel bug and she wanted to go and travel overseas. And she started selling Excel macros and templates on Gumroad and some of those, you know, $10, $15 here. And in 18 months, she's funded, you know, herself around the world where she doesn't have to work for a corporate anymore and those things, from skills and things that a corporate job gave her, you know, skills that she had developed and those things by selling things in Excel. So I think a lot of people devalue their knowledge and a lot of people devalue the skills, because if you can solve a problem where you give someone a currency back, you know, time or relationships or money or anything like that, and you can show them a shorter path to doing the things that they want, and you've got a tool to do that, then you can create leverage around that tool by making an offer.
I'm curious how you tackle the problem that I know I've faced and I've seen others face in this, because you've hit the nail on the head. Like if you can solve a problem, I think for many people, myself included, like, you know a bunch of stuff, you know, you're really good at some things, but you may not be able to articulate this is the problem that it actually solves for other people, which is really the key mechanism to make an offer work. You've got to be able to clearly articulate this is the problem I solve. And I can't remember the exact scientific term for it, but you know, the more you know about something, the less you actually value your knowledge,
yeah,
right? The less you know about it, the more you're like, this is the best thing. I'm the smartest person in the world. And the more you know, the more you're like, yeah, I don't know everything. And this is just kind of what I do. How have you tackled that? Or how do you help your clients tackle that when it's like, I don't actually know that I can solve problems, even though they can?
We mine the past, right? And often the problem, the most powerful, potent problem is one that you've solved for yourself, right? Some of the, you know, I don't work with a ton of people in like fitness and those spaces, but often when you go right to root to the origin story, their path into that was like losing weight, getting fit, you know, and doing it for themselves and like working it out along the way.
Yeah.
And I find over and over again that like the current avatar, if you like, the current person that people want to sell to is often a previous version of themselves. So I just help people go back and acknowledge the past and mind the past. And it's difficult for some people to acknowledge that they've done great work, right? That they actually delivered value on some because they had this concept that they were going to deliver value in this way, but someone got the value that they didn't perceive. You know, you help someone lose weight, but it wasn't, they said it was to look good in the mirror, but it was actually to feel good about themselves, right? So they didn't, people have this complex. They say, well, I helped this person did that, but you know, they didn't really value the result. They got another result.
Yeah.
And when you actually honor the fact that you help someone do something often yourself, you know, either solve a problem or in the case of mentorship, you know, especially with more experienced people, remove a roadblock, you know, because that's my distinction between, you know, consulting and mentorship. Mentorship is much more about peeling, helping someone peel back the layers to get to the root value that they know they have already. And you're removing barriers by helping them model how you do that. Whereas consulting is very much, you've got a problem and I'll tell you how to solve it. You know, so the commitment that people make to those things is that's a useful distinction for some people and a confusing one for others. But, you know, really it's about going to the past and mining that and understanding how you're best positioned to help somebody.
And so with your definition there of a mentor, mentorship is, you know, that peeling back of layers, removing a roadblock. Consulting is I'll tell you how to solve it. Where does coach fit into that model? Is that just another word for mentorship, or do you have a different definition of how you define the difference between a coach, a mentor, and a consultant?
Yeah, I'd use a really simple definition. Consulting is like, I'll tell you what to do. Coaching is, I'll show you that you already know how to do it, which is essentially integration.
Yep.
And mentorship is like, I'll tell you how I would do it.
Yeah.
Right. So I predominantly spend most of my time in a mentorship mode where my answers to things with people is like, this is how I've done it. This is how I do it. And, or this is how I'd approach or think about that. So I very much embody the mentorship mode because I'm opening the positive loop of the more I improve myself, the more results I achieve for myself, the more success that I cover and cultivate for myself, the more success that those people around me actually cultivate.
I love that.
So I see myself as the ultimate model. So I make things for me. I create for me. I solve problems for me. And then I embody the solutions to that and share them with other people. So I'm very good at each modality, right? And so I can wear different hats at different times. And, you know, you've been to some of, you know, the group calls, et cetera. Often I'll ask permission. If someone's not getting the thing that they need in the time frame that I think they need it, I'll just ask them, which is like, can I consult you on this right now?
Yeah.
And I'll just tell them what to do, right? Because sometimes you just need to go route one with the actual problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I've never bought into the internet thing, which is like, I'm a business coach or I'm a this or I'm a that. These things are not very useful identities. They are for a bit, but they're over the long term, they're not really useful to embody as identities. But they're very, very useful to embody as modalities and skills. Because if you're a great consultant and a great coach and a great mentor, then you're the most useful to the largest amount of people.
I resonate strongly with that. And I like that. Like, the idea of identifying.
You do it with your team, right? You know, you have to play those roles internally and you play those roles.
Yeah, there are times with the team that I'm going, here's how you need to solve it. Other times it's, you know, so I'm putting full on CEO directive, like this is what you need to do and just get it done. Other times it's like coaching them, you know, and I still remember early days of trying to train many people. They train helplessness in their staff. Staff member reaches out to them with a question and they go into consult mode and they just tell them the answer, which then teaches the team member that it's faster and easier to come and ask you a question than to actually go and do the work to figure it out or spend a moment to think about it. And so then the CEO or the business owner gets really annoyed because they're like, my staff bombarding me all the time. It's like, it's your fault. You train them that it's easier to come to you.
Yeah.
And so what you got to do there to untrain helplessness is sometimes you just got to ignore them. So they have to figure it out on their own. You know,
yeah.
My team know I did that to them. And other times you've got to move into coach mode.
Yeah.
Right. Coach mode, which is like, well, okay, what have you thought about it? Even though in your head, you're like, this is exactly what I would do to fix this. You've got to pause and you've got to go, okay, so what are you thinking? What's your approach? What are you going to do? You've got to stop yourself from telling them what to do because you've got to help them learn. And then absolutely, like now when I'm working with my operations manager on those ops calls, when she comes to me with, here's the problem, 99% of the time it's mentorship. It's like, here's how I'd tackle it, but it's kind of going like, it's your call. What do you want to do? Only occasionally would it be like, consult. This is what I need you to do. Do this.
Yeah.
So I hadn't thought about it in that way. What I love in particular, the reframing of going, whether you're a mentor, or a coach, a consultant, it's not about an identity of who you are. It's a modality that you engage in. That's powerful for those that are hearing that and can truly hear that message. That's a powerful shift that could unlock a lot for you if you've previously identified as a consultant or a coach or whatever.
Yeah. I've found it very freeing for people who have injected learned helplessness into their client base because they are stuck in that telling mode. And essentially they've injected learned helplessness in their client and customer base and often their team.
Yeah.
And they feel like they're in the middle of everything because they've put themselves in the middle of everything. And when they can wear the different hats and the different modalities and evolve to a mentor, they're comfortable with not giving people the answer all the time. And they're also comfortable with the frustration that does, you know, initially bring out of people. In my experience, parents have a much easier job with this because parents, after a little while, understand that you can tell your kids anything.
Yeah.
But they'll only listen to a fraction of it. But when you show them and demonstrate and allow them to model from you, then their learning, you know, takes off in terms of that.
So true.
So parenting is the ultimate kind of test of whether you're a good mentor or not. Can you be a good model or quote unquote role model for the people around you? Because if you evolve from just telling everybody what to do all the time, you'll always be the person who tells people what to do. But if you show and demonstrate and do those things for yourself, which is a pretty natural human thing, then you'll find that people model you and both the positive and the negative pieces of you and find utility in modeling you as well.
Yeah, I love that. And I love how you've been able to bring that back to parenting too, because it all comes down to being a leader in my view, right? Like a true leader will bring about whatever skills they need. A true leader, some people think a leader is a dictator who's telling everyone what to do. And there are times and place that that is true.
Fully.
But that's not sometimes, you know, sometimes the leader's job is to stand back and just guide, put a bit of boundaries here and there, mentor, support, but actually get out of the way. Like it is truly, I'd never really thought about it, but it truly is kind of a mix of these three modalities, as you say, that a true leader will sit in. And a leader not only is doing that for the people around them, their family, you know, as a man, I believe that our role, if you want to step into what the identity I talk about, becoming the king, you know, you're the owner of your business rather than the operator. You're the leader of your family rather than, you know, the passive passenger. You're the protector rather than the risk taker. You've got to lead your family. You've got to lead your business. But to do all of those other things, you have to be leading yourself.
Yes, 100%. And owning it too. I always say there's another step beyond leadership, and that's ownership of leadership, right? Because a lot of people are leaders, but deny it, right? Because they have shame about leadership, because they're unconfident in their boundaries. They're not confident when they are in the different, you know, modes of doing it. And they have shame around it because that maybe the models that they had before them, often their parents and these things, you know, were reluctant leaders as well. Especially males often have a bit of trouble owning the leadership piece to say, you are a leader. You are a leader, whether you like it or not, because people are seeking leadership from you. But without ownership of that, then you're a very, very weak leader.
Let's talk about men for a moment with that. Do you find that that's true of their view of themselves as a leader in business or more as a leader in areas outside of business, like at the home and other areas? I'm curious your experience when you point to that.
I'm not a believer in the way you do one thing is the way you do everything, because I've seen enough contradiction and edge cases and around that to make it not a heuristic that I buy into.
Yeah, it's a nice saying and people can connect with it, but it's not the whole picture. I agree with you there. Yeah.
I've found that people just tend to be quite extreme. So I've found that people will be like the nice guy at home, but the dictator at work, or vice versa. So I've found that people are either integrated, where they have similar behaviors across the board, where their leadership is consistent and across places, they're good at setting boundaries, they're an open communicator, et cetera. They tell people what they need clearly and concisely. And, you know, they use the clear as kind as mantra rather than it's nice. So they're integrated, or they're at one extreme where they're a dictator in the business and a nice guy at home, or vice versa.
Well, that was my experience. That was my journey.
There isn't much. I haven't seen many other examples apart from the integrated or the extreme.
Well, that's kind of why I asked, because that was the first thing I thought about, is like my experience with men that I've spoken to is typically the entrepreneurial man has no problem stepping into being the leader of their business, to be like, yep, it's my business, I call the shots, boom, 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 boom. Yet at home, they are suffering from, you know, nice guy syndrome, right? Like, you know, for those, I think I mentioned on previous episodes, you know, No More Mr. Nice Guys by Donald Glover or Robert Glover or whatever his name is. I think it's Robert Glover.
Yeah. Good book.
He does a really good way of describing what that nice guy syndrome ultimately is. I think that most people who suffer from nice guy syndrome, I haven't thoroughly tested this, but we did a recent episode about attachment theory. I believe they probably more lean to the anxious attachment style, because that's true of me. But I was that guy. Like, I was no problem being the leader, strong in business. And yet in the home, I would shrink away. I just wanted to be the nice guy. I wouldn't necessarily say what I truly wanted. I felt like it was not okay, because society that I grew up in, and my parents in particular, I had this worldview that it was not safe. It was not okay as a man to be like that in a relationship.
Yeah.
It took a lot of peeling back and work on my part, and also my partner Liz's part, for us to work through that dynamic. And I wouldn't say I'm cured. I would always say I'm a recovering nice guy. But it's, again, going to that, you know, in a previous episode, we talked about your mess is often your message, or you're talking to a previous version of yourself. I recently got the distinction that my avatar, my ideal client for the dadpreneur program, is a nice guy dadpreneur, that they fall into that space.
Yeah, it's very, very common. I think especially, and many people have had only this, the beginning of awakening of that, usually at the end of a relationship. They've come through a relationship or they've entered a new one, and they understand that if they continue the models that they had before, then they're going to be looking for another relationship.
They're going to be starting the process all over again.
Yeah.
I can relate to that.
So it often needs an awakening, you know, and I've had a couple, but it often needs an awakening and a proper kick for people to actually seek and admit those facts that they're behaving inconsistently across different domains.
It's funny you say that. I was just thinking about my dadpreneur clients, and they're either divorced or cut. Like, they've probably had that big kick somewhere in their journey. I never put that together. That's really interesting. Really interesting.
Yeah, because it's funny for me. Like, you know, I, at the end of the day, sell time compression to my clients, you know, and the people I work with is like, listen, I'll help you avoid the pitfalls and the potholes and all the things that I've experienced along the journey and compress time. And I always say, like, my best clients are going to be successful without me.
Yeah.
I just give them a shorter route and do it with a bit more ease at the end of the day. But for me, it's like, nothing matches experience until you're in it. And until you've done it or you've suffered in it, then I don't think anyone can ever fully embody it. Mm. Right. You know, and I will admit, I occasionally let clients do things that I know won't be great for them, but won't be catastrophic, to prove to them that it might not be the thing they want to do, and to have a real experience of it rather than just say, don't do that. It won't work how you think it will, or it won't work how you want it to. It's, again, it's kind of,
I was just thinking that goes back to the parenting thing where you can't, if you try to save your child,
you can tell them not to touch the hot element because it's, I know it's pretty and red, but it will burn you. But one day they're going to touch the hot element and they'll believe you that it's hot when you're not there. And then they'll know. And it's the same with, you know, we don't outgrow any of that.
We're just big kids wrapped in older outsides, but the insides, we're still just...
Mostly hairy. We're just hairy kids.
Yeah, yeah. And we're lying to ourselves, trying to convince ourselves that we're not still those innocent little children that are throwing a tantrum because life's not going the way, their parents not giving them whatever they thought they wanted or whatever's happening.
Exactly.
So I think we've gone in some really interesting places, and there's so much popping from this. I want to remind people that if you're liking some of this stuff, the first point of leverage that I think makes sense if you like the idea of a sovereign consultant, and I'll be honest, even if you don't want to be a sovereign consultant, because I've had a realization, I don't want to be a sovereign consultant.
Yeah.
The offer code that James offers is still going to be relevant to you no matter where you're at in business. So it could be still worthwhile checking out theoffercode.co. Remember, that'll be in the show notes so you can check that out. Where else would you like to take this conversation, James? I don't normally ask this, but I'm curious. Like, you've got a broad range of places. Where do you think would be a nice place to go from here?
Oh, I think the word sovereignty is going to be pretty interesting and pretty relevant. I mean, it has been for me, and I think it's for an increasing number of people. You know, I live here in Bali. I live a, you know, pretty international life. I've got a company set up overseas. I'm a citizen of more than a couple of countries. You know, I've got 4 driver's licenses in my wallet here. And I think as people are, I don't want to say waking up, because I think it implies some grand conspiracy, as, you know, someone, puppet masters and lizards, are pulling the strings behind it. I wish I don't necessarily believe, but I think people are understanding that they can build a kingdom here on earth and live life on their terms. And I think it's also important to acknowledge that doesn't need to look like anybody else's. Mm. You know, I have a ton of people who come to me and are like, I just want to model your life. I've had a number of people work with me and move to Bali with their family and work online and do, you know, and go to the same gyms as me and stuff like that. And I'm like, kind of produced mini me clones, you know, kind of thing. But also I've worked with a ton of people who stayed in the family home that dad passed down to them, you know, 30 years ago, and they operated with more leverage and they were in the happy place because they were spending more time with their family and they could do, you know, their hobbies and those things. And I think it's time for people to really decide what life they want and what they want their life to look like and understand that you can design a business to feed that, because entrepreneurship got really flipping cool about a decade ago, right? Everybody wanted to be an entrepreneur and a scriber. And the word has been, the semantics are kind of almost ridiculous, but not a lot is spoken about why people get into business. Not a lot is spoken about what a business can do for your life, because lots of people, especially males, sacrifice a lot in the course of building a business and sacrifice their life in the process.
Yeah.
And so I'm a huge believer that if you design your life first, then there's so many options. Whatever your skill level, whatever your desire, whatever your earning capacity, whatever your goals are, there are so many options to make that work, right? You know, and I found like working with clients over a decade that if we start with their life and then design the business and build the business around that, we get significantly better results than if we build the business and try and fit their life around it. It's not significantly better results just for their business, but significantly better results for their business and their life and the people that they care about. So I'm a big proponent, you know, we're here for a reason. We're here to build businesses and make money and all these great things, but they enable a life. And anyone can choose what their version of sovereignty is. And I think talking about the to do different paths with, you know, solopreneurship and teams and these things, we were party to a conversation. Well, I was in the conversation about someone who's building a business just like mine with 36 people, and I'm building one virtual assistant in the Philippines, you know, and both it wasn't work. That one was better or worse than the other, but both of them were good for our lives and good for the things that mattered to us. So we made both of them work in that context.
Absolutely. I think about that example of automation agency wouldn't fully work. Well, in my head, wouldn't fully work if I was the one doing the work. Yet I also know graphic designers who will follow a similar model to automation agencies offering unlimited design service, and they are the designer, right?
Yeah.
Now, I hallucinate that they probably don't have good constraints around ensuring that their weeks aren't just gobbled up. But if they took a leaf out of your book and they took that same approach and offered it more exclusively, they had these set days that maybe they were available, it wasn't available every day. There's no reason someone couldn't take a similar model to automation agency, be the person doing the fulfillment, and still have a lot more freedom of time, getting away from the 50, 60 hour weeks that sadly way too many entrepreneurs seem to get stuck in. Like I just, you know, I was there a long time ago in my IT business, but it sucks that people get there and they get stuck. And especially if you've got a family, you know, you are, as you said, you're kind of sacrificing the life. And I know that many men, they hide in their work. They hide in their business because it's
another form of escape.
Yeah. It's an addiction. It's an escapism, because if they, you know, they'd rather be in the chaos and the leadership that feels good in their business than go and deal with the mess that's going on back home, either with their kids, their wife, or all of the above. You got to face into that, because otherwise you're just escaping and you're going to get to your, well, I believe you're going to get to your deathbed and go, oh, well, that wasn't the life I wanted. I love this whole, you know, design your life first.
100%. I've had a client recently that achieved some spectacular results and then unraveled, right? He went from 16 sales calls a week, which was taking up, you know, approximately 16 hours a week, to none, because my methodology doesn't use any sales calls. So he's selling via, you know, sending a document out, as the people will find when they download that template. And also from 9 one-to-one clients to 7 group clients.
Yeah.
Right. So rather than serve his clients on 9 hours of calls a week and more, because he had, you know, open communication. And in the process of finding over 25 hours a week back with no impact on his income, his effective hourly rate, you know, is 10 times what it was. He found that he was there all the time with himself. And he found that he had all this time, and he found the old, wherever I go, there I am thing. And it went through a period of huge struggle because he was using the work to avoid the things that he was avoiding. And there were issues in his life that he knew that the work distracted him from, et cetera. And it put him back into the fire. So it created chaos in another area of his life because it was unaddressed.
Yes.
Right. And people know this. And I make the distinction between knowledge and knowing. You know, knowledge is like, I've got it all up here. But knowing is like, yeah, if I don't do something about my health soon, it's going to be really bad. Or if I don't have a conversation with my wife soon, then this is going, you know, where it goes.
Yeah.
So it has change, even for the better, has consequences if things are in people's lives that are unaddressed.
You know, just a quick story from my own life. When Automation Agency first got to the point where it didn't need me anymore, I was at a certain level of income. We had financial freedom. So I first realized I had financial freedom outside of Automation Agency. Automation Agency didn't really need a lot of me. It actually needed more of me than now, to be honest, but it didn't need a lot of me. It left me sitting at home a lot, realizing that I wasn't fully happy in my relationship and thinking about all these other things going on. And I know that that relationship came to an end, not totally because of that, but it put me in a space where I had to start dealing with me. I then was still avoiding things in that relationship that eventually it was forced to a head. And that thing is what cracked me open.
Yeah.
Funny enough, though, because it cracked me open, some people listening might know this story, I couldn't cope. It was a huge emotional trigger for me of all of a sudden all my wounds of being abandoned as a child. Here it was, this woman abandoning me. I know potentially you can relate to some of this, dude.
I can directly relate.
And so all of a sudden I was like, I can't deal. Team, I'm disappearing for a bit. Don't know how long for. I went to Thailand. I've got a friend there. My coach happened to be there at the time as well. I'm like, I'm going to Thailand. Don't know how long I'm going to be there for. I wasn't in Thailand for that long, but then I went on a road trip with my dad. Like, I just disappeared from the business. No Slack, no calls, nothing. Eight months disappeared from the business. So a big fact that I can now run Automation Agency on 4 hours a month is because of the gift of that stepping away for 8 months. It's like, if I can step away for 8 months, well, I definitely don't need to be involved as much as I was trying to be involved before that happened, because it was an escapism.
Yeah.
And I was able, two things, I was able to start dealing with some of the crap that was going on. And secondly, I think for many men, not just men, any business owner who's often stuck in the day-to-day, who's got a bit of a team, the biggest thing that I usually have to give someone, whether they're paying me or not, is permission to step the fuck out of the day-to-day, like to just give it up and go get over your own ego and actually give it up. That's often what's needed.
Yeah, fully. Yeah, I was in a very similar situation where, you know, someone left. My scenario is with the children or with me and the responsibility of that. Thankfully, my biggest desire was to lean into it, which was actually a surprise for me.
Yeah.
Right. It was actually a surprise for me, is like, I love being a dad and I want to be here and I want them with me and those things. So I wanted to curl up in a ball. I wanted to, you know, hope the world would just pass me by and then I'd wake up and everything would be fine. But I had to go back into the fire. You know, I had to go through, like, unravel the past, you know, and the stories and all the things and the idealism of family and what I thought I was going to have in a family until the day I died, and go through it. Luckily, that's my nature, whereas I am relatively aggressive personality, and fighting and getting a bit angry and getting those things is in, you know, as I've got older there and more wise, they're an easy energy transfer to me in terms of into motion and action. So I'm good at turning those things into, turning anxiety into, and anger and those things into motion and action. So I had to go through. So luckily that was my default state. Well, luckily, but also the responsibilities I had around me meant I had to keep going. It was an easy state for me. And that's not easy for everyone. Some people just need to stop, take stock, take the time like you did, recalibrate, and then, you know, build back on the journey that they want to be on themselves.
Oh, and, you know, from a personal point of view, dude, like, seeing your journey, like, I knew a little bit of what was going on when it was going, a little bit as it was going on. Like, you'd given me a little bit, like, I didn't know all the ins and outs, and I've learned more since. But it shows in the shift of the James that I see and how you show up in business, in life, the messaging, the stuff you talk about, like, you going back into the fire forged you into the man you are today, which is that stronger leader, king energy that is so needed in this world.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think as with all these things, strategy of which business strategy you go, the solopreneur route and trying to get lots of leverage like you've done, or you go down my route of you build a big, it doesn't even have to be that big, but you build a business that doesn't rely on you so that you just truly earn the money and you do other things if you want to. It's the same outcome, different paths. And the same thing, if you're listening and you're currently going through a challenge, a relationship breakdown, empathy for you, it's not great. And you got two paths you can do. You can do my path where I just couldn't deal and need to run away. But in a way, I was running away from the stuff that I was distracting myself with. And
you ran towards yourself.
Exactly. That's what I was going to get to. Like I ran towards myself.
Like you moved.
Yeah.
Movement is required. Right.
I ran away from the distraction, but I ran into me. And that's sometimes that's what you need to do. And then similarly for you, you ran into the fire, which meant you had to face all the same kind of things that I was working through over those 8 months. You had to face it just in a different energy, in a different space. Whereas I was like, I'm out. I'm just working on me.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're both equally valid paths and someone's there at the end.
Exactly.
And it's you. So it's the responsibility of the individual to make sure that's the most, you know, the most innate real version of you.
And if my experience and some of my friends' experience happens to you, so if you're listening and you're currently going through or just been through this, you know, divorce or long-term relationship breakdown, whatever it may be, you might get to a point where you feel like you're really good and you're like, I'm solid. I know who I am. And then you get into a new relationship. It's going to highlight some of those things that maybe you thought you'd sorted out that you haven't sorted out. And that's the beautiful thing of a relationship, in my opinion. In business, you've got to deal with so much stuff of your own stuff. And then relationship, I believe you can get to a certain level of solidarity. I don't know words I'm looking for. Solidity in yourself, by yourself. But until you then get into the world of relating and the triggers and the traumas and the childhood stuff that will start to come up in that, you don't really, this is my experience. I'm speaking from my own experience. And so I'm projecting a little bit here, but it's a worthwhile thing is what I would say. And if you're in that journey, good, best of luck to you.
Yeah, I think to the people who are about to be in that journey but don't know they are, when, you know, I remember 18 months ago, you know, lying there on a Saturday and making great money and I was lying on my lounger next to my pool in Bali and there were kids playing around and, you know, there were things that were uneasy in me. I couldn't put my finger on what was off. And I kind of had a suspicion that I didn't admit, you know, and I was staring at the sky going, is this it?
Mm.
Right. And I talk about knowing, and I knew, but I didn't want it to be true. And I meet a lot of people who are in that stage of they know that if they're questioning, like, I've got all the things I wanted, I've get doing all the things I said I was going to do, I've got this, I've got the money, I've got the thing, we've got the family, but it's off. Or something's off, you know, and it's only, no one's coming to save you from that. Only you can lean into it.
So true. So true. It's getting very spiritual now, but it's like the answer is in you, right? Like that's the only thing, and peeling back the layers and understanding it all and how you choose to show up. Yeah. I'm just thinking of.
I think the same sentiments do come up in business as well.
Yeah.
People know that, you know, they're in the wrong vehicle, maybe driving to the destination they want, but they're in the wrong vehicle. Yeah. You know, and I work with a lot of people who are in that stage of like golden handcuffs. I'm making $1 million a year, but I feel like I'm a prisoner in my own, you know, world because I'm singing and dancing on the internet, telling everyone everything's great. But actually, I hate what I do underneath and I hate the people who are in it and I don't want to burn it down. And eventually they do. So, but there are much more constructive ways to honor the skills and the experience they've built up than necessarily burning it down. And transitioning to new vehicles these days has never been easier.
100%. Absolutely agree to that. So if you are sitting there going, I hate my business, you got multiple routes out of that. You could sell the business. You can transition to something else. You can remove yourself like I have from Automation Agency. Like there are lots of parts of Automation Agency I didn't enjoy doing, hence why I got out of doing those things. Yeah. So there are so many paths and that's just a couple of them. I think what'd be really cool, James, to wrap things up, if you were to distill your three biggest, you know, obviously you've gone through a lot of growth in the last 18 odd months, right? Or longer. If you were to distill the three biggest pieces of advice or ways of thinking to sum everything up for someone listening, no matter where they're at in their journey, what would you come down to as the three big things you want people to hear and take away?
The first is always put your own mask on first. You know, everybody's a leader to some degree and everybody signed up for something, whether that's in a relationship or children or business or anything, or just the self. Your primary way to grow is to put your own mask on first and give yourself and listen to your own needs. If you're ignoring those right now, you will fail on whatever you're going to do, and it's just a matter of time. Secondly, you are the cliche of you are the product of the five people you spend the most time with has never been more true in a world that wants you to be lots of things you don't necessarily want to be. So, you know, choosing your environment carefully and choosing the people that are around you very, very carefully is absolutely crucial. And choosing your allies and your enemies carefully is essential as well. The world wants you to be something. Other people want you to be something. And if that's not aligned with who you want to be, then you need to cut them out.
Mm.
Thirdly, is we are all sovereign. We can choose the life. You may think you don't have any choices whatsoever, but you know, if we are all sovereign and we will get to choose what our life looks like. It might not be available to you next week or next month or next year. It might be a decade away, you know, to have the ultimate life that you imagine that you can do. But we're all sovereign here. We've got to build it. We've got to take responsibility for it and advocate for ourselves about what we want. And if you do that, you will get there and it will be inevitable. You know, I'm on the path back to running a multi-million dollar consultancy business. You know, I've set a goal to have $5 million profit in a consulting business. Every day I get up and I act like I'm running a $5 million consultancy. I set the standards of that. I live like that. I make decisions like that. I invest like that. And I pursue that. And then I know that if I do that, it will become, because I've been there before. I know that if I act as if my goals have been achieved, not, and that doesn't mean, you know, I'm going to fly first class, you know, when the credit card's, you know, at its maximum limit and spending like one, but I'm acting and taking the standards and embodying one.
Yeah.
And if you want to be sovereign on this earth, then you need to act to the standards that of the person you desire to be. And if you do that, then the person you desire to be will become inevitable.
It's an old chestnut of the personal development world. Be times do equals have, right? When you be, you then do, and then you'll have, and you can reverse it. I want to have these things. People who have that need to do this. To do those things, I need to be this. So yeah, I love that. That's really great wisdom. Some amazing pearls there, and really appreciate, you know, opening up across various areas on this episode. And it's always a pleasure to chat, man. Okay. Apart from theofficode.co, is there anywhere else you would recommend people best find you, learn more about Sovereign Consultant, or just you in general?
Yeah, if you follow me on Facebook or friend me on Facebook, then you get to hear me talk about my hatred for oat milk and my disdain for Atomic Habits.
I love it. Yeah, I will attest. James's posts on Facebook are one of the few that I actually enjoy reading. Sometimes I don't love them, but most of the time I do. Yeah, there's only a handful of people I would say that's true of enjoying reading their posts on Facebook. So recommend that. Thank you, dude. Thank you so much for being on the show. Right. And dear listener, if you've been enjoying this episode, as well as checking out James's stuff, you can also like, follow, leave a recommendation on this podcast. And you know what would be even more helpful to the world, and it will help me too, is if while listening to this episode, someone came to mind. Could have been a friend, could have been a team member, could have been a relative. Someone came to mind that you're like, oh, they should hear this. The best gift that you could give them and me is to grab the link, wherever the share link is on the tool you're listening to this. If you're on YouTube watching this, great. And share it with them. Just go, hey, I was watching this, listening to this, and you came to mind. You should check this out. Couple of things. One, it's going to help them because there's some content here that you clearly thought was relevant to them. And two, it's going to expose someone new to this podcast. And I deeply appreciate that because it helps spread the message and help. I know James is going to appreciate that, people hearing his episode as well. So if that happened to you, please share this episode with that one person that came to mind. It'll be a great gift that you give them and me at the same time. As always, if you haven't left a review and you've been listening for a long time, appreciate those reviews on your favorite podcast platform of choice. Until next time, keep up the journey. You'll find all the show notes, everything you need at rising.show. Rising.show. Till next time. See ya.
You've been listening to Entrepreneurs Rising. Thank you, dear listener, for tuning in. I appreciate your time and look forward to connecting in future episodes. If you would like show notes or any resources from today's episode, you can find them at rising.show. Rising.show. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes, as well as links to socials and the ability to reach out and connect with me, make your suggestions. Suggestions for future episodes. Until next time, keep up the journey.
This episode was brought to you by Automation Agency. If you're sick of Fiverr and Upwork and want a reliable team of experts who can turn your marketing ideas into marketing duns, then head over to automationagency.com and check out what they can do. Whether it's graphic design tasks for social media, your presentations, or tech tasks like building funnels and email automations, or content creation tasks like copywriting and video editing, Automation Agency is the one team you need to help you market your business and free up your time to focus on more important things. So go and check out automationagency.com.